I'm surprised to even see a spark come from that flint. It's so wet out here.
You feel you can do a better job?
Never know till you try. Step back. Thanks.
Jordan palmed a fire pellet from his sleeve, cracked the coating deftly with his fingernail, and then dropped the pellet into the piled heather with a quick, mystical gesture. The heather immediately burst into flames, and thick smoke curled up as the fire took hold. Jordan and Gawain straightened up and held out their hands to the leaping flames. Gawain looked sideways at Jordan.
Oh, that was very impressive. Mind telling me how you did it?
Professional secret, I'm afraid. The quickness of the hand deceives the eye and all that. It's really quite simple when you know how.
It seems Count Roderick was right in choosing you. If that wasn't fire magic, it's the nearest thing I've seen to it outside Castle Midnight.
Jordan bit his lip and looked seriously at Gawain. The knight seemed in a companionable enough mood, and there were a few questions Jordan very much wanted answered.
Tell me about Castle Midnight, Gawain. Some of the stories I've heard about it have been pretty damn strange. Are there really ghosts and monsters walking through the corridors at all hours of the day and night? Is there really a dungeon that eats people? Is it true that anyone can work magic in the castle, just as long as they've spent the night there?
Yes and no.
To which parts?
There are all sorts of stories about Castle Midnight, but most of them have got rather confused in the retelling. Magic, elemental magic that is very common at the castle, but that's only because so many of the aristocracy have some ties to the royal bloodline. In fact, status among the castle's high society is largely determined by the power of your magic, as that demonstrates the relative purity of your blood. As for ghosts and monsters, that's a little more complicated. You have to understand that what is real and unreal can easily become rather confused at the castle. It's always been that way. Some say there's high magic built into the ancient walls. Others claim there's wild magic in the hill the castle rests on. No one knows the whole truth, but for as long as anyone can remember, there have always been ghosts in Castle Midnight, day and night. They're mostly harmless, as long as you don't upset them, and after a while you get used to them. They're only people who have become lost in time, who wander from the path and cannot find their way back.
And the monsters?
There are a few monsters every now and again. Our steward takes care of them, as and when necessary. I suppose I'd better tell you about her. Catriona Taggart is the third of her line to serve as steward of the castle. Good-looking girl, and tough with it. She has no blood, but like all her family, she's very proficient at the high magic. She and Victor don't get on. I think he disapproves of anyone outside the aristocracy wielding so much power. Anyway, it's the steward's job to keep an eye on the unreal and make sure it doesn't get out of hand. In normal times, there isn't much for her to do. You see, the combination of real and unreal in one place generates a hell of a lot of mystical power. A power the king can draw on through the ancient stone set under his throne. The power amplifies the king's elemental magic enormously, and at the same time enables him to keep the real and the unreal in balance. This, of course, ensures that the power keeps on flowing. However, at times like these, when there's no king on the throne, things can get pretty hairy at Castle Midnight. Without the king to maintain the balance, the unreal starts trying to break loose and run free. All kinds of insanity take shape and form and come to life. Ghosts and monsters are only the half of it. And this, of course, is where the steward really comes into her own. Her job is to hold things together as best she can with her sorcery, until a new king takes the throne and restores the balance.
You make it sound as though the unreal is alive.
No one knows for sure what the unreal is. Ask 10 different people and they'll give you 10 different answers. You'll see for yourself when we get to the castle.
I think I'm missing something here. If there's that much power just waiting to be grabbed, why haven't Louis or Dominic simply declared themselves king and taken the throne by force? From what I've heard about those two, it ought to be the first thing they'd think of.
As I keep pointing out, inheritance isn't quite that simple at Castle Midnight.
Jordan looked around sharply. Roderick and Argent stepped forward and warmed their hands at the fire. Jordan wondered if he ought to say something cutting, given their earlier slights, but decided against it. For better or worse, he had to learn to work with these people. And they were, after all, the ones who were paying him. 50,000 ducats, he thought grimly. And he just knew he would have to earn every bloody penny of it.
In order to inherit the kingship, the claimant has to produce both the king's crown and his seal of office, and present them to the stone in the correct ceremony. The stone then grants the king power over the unreal. Without that power, no king can rule in Red Heart.
Don't tell me. The crown and the seal have both gone missing, right?
I said you were starting to think like a prince. Victor and his two brothers have been turning the castle upside down since Malcolm died, but there's no trace anywhere of crown or seal.
Wait a minute. If Louis or Dominic had killed King Malcolm, that would mean they'd have to have the crown and seal. Since they obviously haven't got them, that proves Louis and Dominic couldn't have been the murderers. I mean, they wouldn't have been stupid enough to kill the king without being sure where the crown and seal were first, would they?
The best laid plans can go adrift. Or perhaps there was a third party involved that we don't know about. There's a great deal concerning the king's death that remains unclear. What is clear is that if it becomes known at court that Prince Victor is ill and therefore vulnerable, he'll lose all hope of support. That's why we need you, Jordan. We need you to be the prince in public so that our people can carry on the search behind the scenes.
The four of them stood silently around the fire for a while, each man considering the complications of the situation and his own part in it.
Well, I'm going to find some breakfast. We'll ride farther with full bellies.
I'll do the same for the horses.
I'll check our route. We'll want to get to the castle as soon as possible.
Once again, Jordan found himself left out of things and decided to go for a little walk to see what there was to see. Besides, the exercise might warm him up.
Whew. Wish I hadn't bet my gloves on those dice 2 towns back.
The open moor stretched away in all directions, colored gray and purple by the hard-wearing heather that flourished where little else would. The only disturbance in the even landscape was a smooth oblong mound that rose a good 10 feet above the moor, lying not far from the rough trail. Jordan walked slowly through the heather toward it. Despite the patchy heather that covered the mound from crown to foot, he could still tell the shape was too regular for it to be a natural phenomenon. More likely, it was a barrow of some kind, a burial mound for some ancient chieftain. When he was a child, Jordan's mother had told him never to go near a barrow, because that was where the fairy kind lived. And if they tempted him through the secret door in the heart of the barrow, he'd never be seen again. When he was a little older, he sat and listened wide-eyed to the odd ballad of Silbury Hill, which told of a king in golden armor who lay sleeping under a barrow with his great sword in his hand, waiting to be called forth to do battle with the final evil at the end of time. When he'd reached a man's age, Jordan decided that all the stories and ballads were nothing more than myths and legends, and barrows were just graves and mounds of earth. He still had a fondness for the old stories, and often incorporated them into his act, but he knew there was no truth in them, or so he'd believed, until now. Approaching the great mound of earth was like knocking on the door of a haunted house. There was something about the barrow, a disturbing sense of presence, of something evil waiting and watching. Jordan stopped halfway to the mound and stared at it for a long moment.